The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On the last couple of programs, we've been looking at the, figuratively, at the starfish, talking about the starfish, the echinoderms, and their absolutely unusual characteristics. We will talk about the representatives in each of the classes at some point, but I think it might be well at this stage simply to talk a little bit about the starfish, the Asteroidea, the class name, that would be familiar certainly to anyone who's around the ocean very much. And if you visit it, you have undoubtedly seen them. Or if you've been to a marine aquaria, you have probably seen them. I was thinking as I was getting ready to do this program, I read years ago, in fact, I think it was one of the first textbooks we used, about the difficulty of the oyster fishermen, the problems they had with the starfish that would be in the oyster beds. Now, as you may or may not know, starfish feed primarily on shellfish, and they have a very ungentlemanly way of getting to that food. Most of you, I would assume, have seen clam shells, the organisms that have two shells that fit together very tightly, and they are held together with some very, very strong muscles. And the anatomy of the starfish is not such that it has the ability simply to force its way into a clam or an oyster. But what it will do, it will crawl up over the top of the shellfish and simply using the vacuum powered tube feet, little structures that we will talk about a little bit later, it will simply crawl up over that and sit there and begin to apply some pressure. Now, I wonder sometimes if the clam doesn't sit inside and laugh at the starfish saying, well, you can't get in. Well, it doesn't make any effort to. It simply sits there and applies the pressure. And after a period of time, minutes or hours, the muscle of the clamfish, the two that hold the shells together, begin to get fatigued. And so they relax a little bit. And then the starfish just sits there, and the tube feet keep pulling gently on the shell. And after some period of time, I would expect it to be a fairly long period, finally the muscles become completely fatigued and are no longer able to hold the shell together. Now, at that point, the starfish, you'd look at it and say, well, great, how in the world are you going to eat a clam, the actual meat of the clam, down inside two open shells? It doesn't have a mouth as such. It doesn't have teeth. It can't pull the stuff out. And the ungentlemanly part comes when it has the ability to evert its stomach. And its stomach will actually come out of its mouth, go down into the shell, inside the shell, and simply digest the shellfish there inside its own house. That's the part that seems ungentlemanly to me. Now, since we are interested in the difficulties that these organisms pose for evolution, think that one over for a while. How in the world could a shellfish evolve not only the structures but the behavior which would allow the nutrition to be gotten in that fashion? And we're not talking about something that you can run trial and error for millions of years. It's got to work right the first time. It has to be a method that would allow the starfish to obtain nutrition that allows it to go on living. And this is a combination of so many factors that it simply is unreasonable, if not laughable, to think that the starfish would somehow be able to develop these through trial and error methods over long periods of time. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, as we've mentioned, the shellfish have radial symmetry. This is symmetry, which means you can divide the bodies into mirror images in the case of radial symmetry in a number of cases. For a five-armed starfish, there would be five mirror images you could come up with. And since there are usually five, the term here is pentamerous. So a starfish with five arms or five ambulacra, which is the technical term for it, could be divided in such a way that there would be five of these. Now, one of the most interesting things about the starfish to me is simply the fact that they do not have any head. Now, most organisms do. It may not be well defined in some cases. In most cases it is. But the starfish doesn't have a head. And more to the point, it doesn't have a brain. Now, it's a little difficult for me to conceive of an animal with no brain that can even be thought of as being able to rationalize and to bring about changes in its body that will be of advantage, etc. It does have a nervous system, and the receptors are pretty much what you would expect the spectrum to be. We'll talk about those a little bit. It probably the best developed sense of the starfish would be a tactile sense, a sense of touch. If you have seen videos of starfish approaching shellfish, you might wonder, well, how in the world does it know they're there? And on the other hand, how in the world do the shellfish know that the starfish is around? Years ago, I saw one video which showed a starfish that was creeping up on a scallop. And the scallop escaped by one of the most unique responses I think I've ever seen. All of a sudden, the scallop began clapping its shells, and it was actually flying around through the water just like a bird flies. Now, you look at the scallop lying there by itself, and you would never imagine that it would be possible for it to be able to move in that way. But once the shellfish have responded that way, what does the starfish do? How do they know where they are, what they're walking on, etc.? So apparently the tactile sense is very important, and I would think number two probably are the chemoreceptors. It has the ability to detect certain chemicals, and I would imagine that it is this ability which actually helps the starfish be able to find out where the supper is. It also has some feet, podia, muscles that allow it to move the arms not readily or easily, but they can change the shape of them and do move a little bit. It does have some tentacles, some of them do. Some of them have photoreceptors that they are attracted or repelled, as the case may be, by light. And there also are structures that are known to zoologists as statocysts. These are little, usually mineral particles, that allow the animal to maintain a knowledge of what body position it's in, whether it's right side up, whether it's still, whether it's upside down, whether it's sideways, that kind of thing. So it helps simply with the equilibrium and maintaining the body position of the organism. But that's about it as far as the nervous system is concerned. There is a ring of nerves that occur around the mouth of the starfish, and there are branches of these that run out into each of the separate arms. But the nervous system is very, very simple. In fact, probably as simple as almost any organism you want to talk about, with the possible exception of sponges or the protozoans. Now, it has an endoskeleton. The technical term for this are dermal calcareous ossicles. Now, let's untangle that a little bit. Dermal just means skin of some kind. The calcareous ossicles are simply structures that are made of calcium carbonate that are found scattered around through the skin. And there are spines, some of them are shaped as spines. The small structures are known as spicules. And they are simply covered by the epidermis with a material, probably protein, that sort of merges all this into a very effective protective covering for the starfish. Some of the starfish have little minute structures, almost microscopic, but not always, that are known as pedicellaria. These are little pincher-like structures that in the five-rayed starfish apparently are useful in cleaning the surface of the starfish off. These little pinchers are there, and when material is attached, becomes attached to the starfish, these little pinchers can go there and remove the stuff. And again, when you start trying to think up how these kinds of structures could have been evolved, you're just talking about something that really doesn't make any sense. Some of these are stalked. Some of them contain poison glands. And again, think through that matter of the starfish having the intelligence, number one, and the ability, the control over its genetic material to vary whatever it might have been to start with in such a way that these kinds of structures could actually have been formed for the purposes, the varied purposes that they actually are used for in the organism. And again, I say, the only sensible view in my mind is simply that they are the product of an intelligent creator. It's not something that occurred as a result of trial and error over millions and billions of years. Now, while the presence of the pedicellaria would not have as important a result in the starfish as the inability to evert their stomachs, they still, on occasion, can be very helpful. And how they are going to be formed from an organism that didn't have them, there simply is no good evolutionary answer to that particular question. Now, the water vascular system, whenever I think of starfish, this is what I think about. If you think of the starfish slowly exerting pressure on the shell of a clam that eventually fatigues the muscles to the point that it can get in, has to be a very unusual structure, and it is. And it actually is activated by water pressure. Now, how it can work is immensely interesting and mysterious, and in my opinion, simply could not possibly have come about as a result of some kind of evolutionary process. There are dozens or hundreds of little tiny tube feet, and depending on whether the water pressure is exerted inside or decreased, this allows them either to form a vacuum suction and hang on to things, or forces them to turn loose. And this is really the basis of the movement of the usefulness of the tube feet. But they didn't evolve. They must have been created.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.